my first knowledge of you was quite negative, I think, of these guys turn up, they think they're trained, they think they're barbers. And some people quite hostile about it. Mm. I'm at odds as to which is right. Do you see what I mean?
I just want to set the record straight here and say that I'm not the first person to be running fast track barber courses. I wanted to do, when I set up my academy, was to do it better than anyone else. And what does that mean? That means that you have to have integrity in what you do. You have to have a method. You have to have understanding of what learners really want.
They've shown some commitment because they've spent some money.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a 12-week course?
It's just shy of £5,000.
You know, so you're putting some money down on an investment on your career. You know, your guys have come out with 12 weeks and an intense 12 weeks, but they still need more guidance. They still need more support.
Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better.
Hi, welcome to a new episode of the Noble Barber podcast. I'm here today with Michael Contas from the London School of Barbering, which I've been looking forward to this one, Michael. Your name comes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. I hope for good reasons.
Yeah, no, in lots. And I say, I mean, I think education is something that has come up a lot here. I make an effort to go and talk to lots of different barbershops, and I'll walk into lots and chat. And it tends to be apprentices, training, staff, that kind of stuff. And so London School of Barbering definitely is a name that runs through there. So I'm really pleased you've made it. Thank you.
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting me on. It's a real honour.
Excellent. But maybe we should start with how the London School of Barbering appeared. What's your story? How did you go to get those doors open?
Okay, so I'll try to make this brief as I can. So I started in hairdressing, and my education was with Sassoons back in 2006. I was a postgraduate of art. I went to a really good university, but then as an art student, it's really hard to get into work and earn money. So I thought, you know, that I need something to kind of fall back on. My sister is a hairdresser. She'd worked for a lot of the good salons, the better salons in Knightsbridge, Michael Johns, Neville Daniels. And at the same time, my cousin, his name is Pedro Enchenko, who's the owner of... what's his name? His salon again, but he does Allion Education.
Okay.
He's based in Covent Garden. He was the principal of the Vidya Sassoon Academy, and he managed to get me on to one of the courses.
Right.
7 months later, I think it was, I graduated, went into some salons, worked for a guy called Michael Barnes, session stylist. That was all good until I had to leave one day. And then I went to Rush, and then I ended up at Hob Salons.
Right.
With the Hob guys. I don't know if you know them. Lovely guys. And during my time at Hob, I wasn't really a busy stylist, so to say. I was too indulgent in my work. I never used to make any money for the company. Clive used to say that I would die a poor artist. And he was right. And that always stayed in my mind. I wasn't making much money as a hairdresser because I wasn't turning them out enough, and I wasn't involved in colour. But in the salons, in the Hob salons, I was, you know, training up the apprentices, and I liked it. I was good at articulating what to do, how to do the technique, and, you know, it resonated really well with the learners. So from there, I decided to get a teaching qualification to do my Assessor's Award. And I gained those, and from Hobbs, I went into a further education college, you know, teaching hairdressing.
Okay.
Which is...
That seems to be the most hated area of our industry at the moment.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it was a real eye-opener for me. So you think that you're going to go in as a teacher, but you end up going in as a carer, as a psychologist, and because I was dealing with, like, a class... of around 20 to 30 girls, 16 to 18 year olds, and that was challenging in itself because, you know, I don't know if you know any 16 year old girls, but in that time of their lives, their emotions are
more emotional than you'd want to be.
Yeah, I don't want to delve too deep into that. But yeah, skimming past that. After the further education college, I worked for a barber academy in central London. I'm not going to mention the name because he is now my competitor.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And yeah, he doesn't like me very much anymore because after we parted ways, I went and set up the London School of Barbering. Mm-hmm.
Which was when? What year did that launch?
We launched in October 2012.
Right.
Yeah. And then we had our first classes in January of 2013. So we're getting all set up and ready. And okay. First class is in January.
In the same space?
No, we were in Covent Garden, our first academy, Drury Lane.
Okay.
On the first floor of Drury Lane. Yeah. It was a bit of a gamble. You don't know what you're doing.
Sure.
You're doing, but you know you have a vision. What made me want to do it in the first place was that I wanted to do it better than anyone else was doing it. You know, I just want to set the record straight here and say that I'm not the first person to be running fast track barber courses. Fast track barber courses were around before I even thought of doing them. What I wanted to do when I set up my academy was to do it better than anyone else. And what does that mean? What that means that you have to have integrity in what you do. You have to have a method. You have to have understanding of what learners really want. Mm. And over the years, I believe that we've kind of fine-tuned it to get that the kind of idyllic learning experience for our students. You know, because then they're the ones that are paying for it. They're the ones that want to learn a new profession, and we've got to deliver on our promise.
Yeah, and you know, now as really a kind of one of the probably the main suppliers for London barbers at the moment. You know, when we start recruiting, we tend to find that's part of a CV. You know, we're probably three camps that we have either have done a paid for course. Have done an apprenticeship, which is have been working elsewhere for a long time, or the new group of the self-taught who have taught themselves from YouTube.
Sure.
All have their own demands, but as your point of view, if you imagine yourself as a barbershop owner taking one of your graduates on that have done a 12-week course, what happens next? Where do you think a barbershop... Because I think my first knowledge of you was quite negative, I think, of these guys turn up, they think they're trained, they think they're barbers. And some people quite hostile about it. Mm. But I met Liam from an earlier podcast, who's the most enthusiastic and the most amazing chap I've met.
Sure.
So I'm at odds as to which is right. Do you see what I mean? What would I expect if I'm taking on someone who's new to the industry? I'm interviewing them. They've done a 12-week course or a 9-week course with you, so they've shown some commitment because they've spent some money.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a 12-week course in pound notes?
It's just shy of £5,000.
You know, so you're putting some money down on an investment on your career. Now, I would know that after a 9-12-week course, they're not barbershop ready. They're not ready to run a full column and get on. What would you give me as to how to work with these guys? What they need next?
The good thing about our graduates is that they're passionate and they're willing to learn.
Mm, right.
You know, some barbers that have been in the trade for a long time, they think they know it all. You know, they're hard to mold. They're hard to... You know, to embed your DNA into, to get your ethos. The ones that are fresh off the learning conveyor belt are the ones that are going to be the most enthusiastic. Mm. They may not be the finished article. But given the time and the patience to get them to that level, I'm sure they would flourish. Again, it's really dependent on the individual. You know, we have a class of 9. I expect on average, through my years of teaching, I've kind of identified that you're going to have 2 shining stars, 5 that are average and 2 that are not going to make it. Mm. Yeah. It's the shining stars that you want to be hiring. The ones that have got the natural talent and then the enthusiasm, they've got the personality, because you know, it's not just about how you cut hair, it's your personality. If you can't attract your clientele by being yourself, then You know, you it doesn't matter how well you can cut hair,
you're
going to struggle. I'm sure you know, the most busiest barbers or hairdressers are not the ones that are the best.
Yeah, they're always the best.
They're the ones that have the personality. And so, you know, there are a lot of naive people coming into barbering education that come to us or any other barbering institute thinking that they can become barbers. I tell you, the reason why they're naive is because they underestimate the difficulty of the job. They underestimate how tough it's going to be, how well you've got to run that column to be able to churn out each client, you know, because, you know, whether you're working for yourself or you're working for an employee, you know, you've got to make money.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line, really. You've got to have customer satisfaction and make someone money.
So would you say that you're more of a kind of halfway house, that when, rather than me taking on a school leaver and trying to apprentice them through to qualifying, I've still got work, I've still got to be involved in training these people up, but you're giving me someone that's kind of 70% there, 75%?
I would say 70, 80% there. The reason for it is mainly due to the abundance of models we're able to provide. Without those models, we wouldn't have a business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that kind of that repetition that allows them to practice. You know, there's
the
lots
kind of,
flying
hours.
The flying hours. You know, we put a lot of pressure on our students to cut. Mm. And the biggest complaint I do get from barbers and barbershop owners is that the students are not as quick as they'd like them. Mm-hmm. We want half an hour cuts. My students cut between 45 minutes to an hour, possibly longer if it's a scissor cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I do my utmost to try to get them to cut as fast as they can. Mm. You know, it's when you come and learn with us, you have to understand it's not all like rainbows and sunshines. Yeah. It's pressure. Mm. It's full on. As good as my educators are, they also know how to, you know, they give a lot of tough love. You know, they tell it how it is. And, you know, they'll say to the students, look, if you don't cut fast enough, you don't execute this haircut fast at a reasonable speed, you're not going to make it. So the reality check is there. It's not like that we take people's money and say, oh, yeah, that's great. We got your money now. You can we'll just get you trained up at a standard that you're happy with and let you go. Mm. It's not like that. We are really integral to what we believe in.
Mm. Okay. And I mean, do you have good relationships with some barbering companies?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I have a lot of people calling me up weekly, daily to recruit our graduates. And frustrating as it is to the people that are inquiring, I always push them towards our website where they have what we call our jobs portal.
Yeah,
I've seen. It's where people can post jobs and as soon as that job is posted, all our graduates and whoever signs up to the registers their name and email address, that will get that job listing towards it to Perfect. Them. So it's like an Indeed or a Gumtree for jobs, so to speak. So, you know, we don't help our graduates get into barbershops directly, even though that I get people asking
requested.
But, you know, if they sign up to the jobs portal, they're going to get lots of notifications on the jobs that are around. And
is there a type of barbershop they tend to flourish in? Is there a kind of a golden route?
I hope so. I do hope so, because I don't want them going to a £5-10 barbershop. I would hope they would go to a 15 and above.
Mm.
Yeah, and I have four ex-graduates working in Ruffians at the moment. Wow. and they're earning £50, £60, £70 a haircut.
Mm.
So, and that really makes me happy that they're earning good money. You know, if they're able to get into the high-end barbershop, then that makes me happy. Because, you know, that's ultimately what you want for them to be able to.
And presumably your students have already had one career. Would that be fair to say? They're coming back for something else. They've drifted or they've not found something that they love.
Yeah, it's about 80 to 90% of our demographics. So are people
and
who are
over 20 and 25.
Exactly, between 20 and 30.
Okay.
Between 20 and 30 that are coming to attempt to go into a new profession. Could be their second, third, fourth career.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and I know we may touch on the colleges and why they shouldn't why should they come to us versus the college? But imagine you're like 28 years old and you want to get into a new profession. Do you want to go and see out a college course in an FE college that takes a year to complete? And in that time, you're only going to do anywhere between 10 to 20 haircuts? No, you'd rather fast track it and get as much knowledge and skills.
And I think
in the industry.
A lot of it, I mean, you tapped on initially, the local authority colleges where, they tend to be younger. They're drifting into it because everyone says you should do that. They're 16, 17, 18. By the time you're 24, 25, 26, and you've had two or three careers, you're presumably more focused. The people you have on your courses have got to be fairly driven people. They've stuck their $5,000 to one side to do it, and then have paid. They've got to live for 3 months without any wages, presumably, while they're on a course.
Yeah, it's spot
on. So there's
a
commitment that's gone in there.
Spot on, and that is the beauty about being a private institute than rather than being government funded. Is that you don't have to deal with the people that don't want to be there.
Yeah.
The people that are put there to, to essentially put bums on seats so they can get the funding.
So
we have to remember, FE colleges are businesses as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean, everyone I've met, and I've met several, they're really interesting people, your students. I'm maligning others. There are other colleges and there are other places that people have been from. But I think when you've made that decision at 25, that whatever you've been doing, you're fed up with. You know, Liam said it brilliantly the other week, where he just said, you know what, I'd get up in the morning and I'd feel ill.
Mm.
And, you know, to the extent that he saw doctors, and then when he changed and he starts cutting hair now, he's just like, it's gone.
He was affected by depression, anxiety.
Heartbreaking to listen to someone. And you kind of go, to pick yourself up and go, right, this is what I'm going to do. By the time they turn up on your door, they've got to be quite amazing people you're meeting, isn't it? I mean,
sure.
Compared to your little period at local authority.
Yeah, it is. You know, you get people from all walks of life, different characters, international students, and you never know what you're going to get, but most people are dedicated. They want to learn. They want to be there. And it makes life a lot easier for our educators.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There are individual cases where you get a disruptive student that doesn't want to be there, that may have had the course paid for by their parents. That does happen. But the majority, they get by and they fly through and they don't give us any sort of trouble at all. We actually try to make it the most enjoyable experience. And most of the time, they don't want to leave.
They become
attached to the place. Mm. They really gain new friends. Everyone goes out for drinks on a Friday night and they bond.
Well, it does seem like they have this kind of touch of what it's like to be in the workplace. Yeah, it seems like you do try and run it like it, certainly by the final few weeks, that it's trying to run more like a barbershop would.
Well, this is a secret to our success, which, if you're ever trying to start a school or an academy or anything, don't treat your models like models, treat them like clients.
Mm.
Yeah, so what that means is that give them the 5-star service, offering them a drink, make sure that they're gowned up right, make sure they've got a good consultation, make sure their haircut has got the educator's signature on it, and it can go out. It's at the standard that we require.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of returning customers that come to us.
I was gonna say, where do your models come from? And was that? I mean, now I presume you've got a bit of reputation, but starting out in the heart of Covent Garden, trying to get people in for haircuts.
So let me tell you. So when I first started in Covent Garden with a class of 5, I think it was, and I had to get them clients to cut on. I would be running the class, but at the same time running down from the first floor where our academy was onto the street on Drury Lane and literally
just go,
would you like a free haircut? Would you like a free haircut? I've bit up this like thick skin of rejection over the years where I've had so many people say to me, no.
Yeah.
But every 10th person you ask will say, sure, free haircut. I'll go for that.
And that's how you build it up. It was just literally just grabbing them off the street.
Yeah.
And do you still work on that principle? It's a free haircut?
No, we charge a little bit now. We do have some free haircuts. We call them standby slots.
Right.
So those standby slots are for us to be able to counsel them. If we knew that we had an absent student, cool, they were sick or they couldn't get in, or they had some emergency,
yeah,
then we have the ability to cancel that client. So that might happen once or twice a week,
okay,
where a student doesn't come in. Because we allocate this X amount of models, clients, for that student to cut on that week.
Right.
So if they're not in on that day, then we have a surplus of models. And then yeah, our waiting area is full. So we have to manage it.
Yeah,
and over the years, we've developed a system where we've been able to manage, you know, surplus and, you know, not enough models as well to be able to make sure the students get enough cuts.
Because that's the big thing, if they're paying and they're doing, and all of a sudden, you know, there is an awful lot of courses out there at the moment that are 100% on blocks. And I'm never quite convinced.
A lot of the hairdressing ones, right?
Well, there's quite a few barbering ones that you're clippering mannequin heads.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for a couple of days is fine, but to do 12 weeks of that, you're not gaining.
Yeah, I don't know how you can really learn on a mannequin.
I don't know how you do a fade on a...
Yeah, you can get taught the basics,
the
motions, just a little taster. But then it has the only way you can learn is on real people, and that's the experience for our trade.
So, what's a haircut cost?
Anywhere between £3 and £7.
Okay,
so it depends. If you're a level two,
what was the decision to charge for though? What made the
We had so many models that wanted to come and have haircuts from us. And we did it at a time where kind of business declined a little bit. So we just thought that we'd...
Another revenue stream
to help us balance the books.
No, that's cool.
To keep our heads above
water. And how did that go from freebies to three quid,
quid? Nobody really batted an eyelid.
See, that's the thing. I keep having this conversation all the time. You got to be brave enough about your pricing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you're not making enough money, you've got to put your price up. You've got to look at what you're doing and not be afraid to charge for your skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and with these guys coming in, you know, they've paid their money. They've got a commitment, and by week 7, 8, 9, they've earned their skills. You know, even if it is only for a free quid haircut, I think it does put a tax on it.
Yeah,
if you like.
They need to know that this client is paying as well.
Yeah.
This is what you've got to get used to.
Yeah, no, it definitely does you a different mindset, I think. Yeah, no, definitely. So now your problem isn't necessarily models. They line up for you. You get a nice steady stream. You got your customers, so you've got all that. Seems like there's an awful lot of barbers still coming into the industry. So are you?
Think so?
Yeah, it does seem like it.
You know, how did you gauge that? How do you
I think it's really for the amount of conversations that are coming up. I think there is an element of, I mean, one of the big things is you're seeing so many barbershops appearing on every single high street. Yeah, there's certainly a rebirth of more barbershops, however useful, legitimate or interesting they are.
Would you call that a rebirth or would you call that like a new phenomenon, having 8 barbershops on one high street?
Well, I think there's always been there's always been an element. When I opened my first barbers, we opened it because there weren't any around, and we opened up our cute little barber shop, and it was really cool. And then within a year, 3 were within a couple of 100 meters, and that's because they saw a big queue outside of ours, and they're like, "Oh, that's that." Now I do think there are some streets where it's gone to insane lines, where, like you say, you've got 8 on a high street.
Yeah.
That I don't know how they make.
Yeah, have you had the Turkish barbershop conversation with any of your hosts yet?
Well, I've had a conversation with someone really about Turkish bar, real proper Turkish barbers getting upset with people putting Turkish barber on the front of their signage. So there definitely seems to be no lack of barbers appearing in our streets.
Sure.
So you're getting you're getting trainees turning up.
Yeah, of course, but it's not like pre-pandemic or pre-Brexit. You know, that's when that was the height. That was the peak.
Mm.
I would say, yeah, we still got many students coming through our doors every 3 weeks, which is our cycle.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm going to be honest, and it's not like the good old days.
No,
before the pandemic, before the cost of living.
I mean,
crisis.
I was going to say cost of living and pandemic and Brexit.
Yeah,
has hit everybody.
We got shot really hard. Yeah,
I was going to say pandemic for you. That was just locked up, shut down, and
it was locked up,
survival.
Shut down. All the students that were learning at that time had to stop their training. And when we were allowed to reopen again, we had to
re-accommodate.
Re-accommodate them and make sure they finished their education. But at the same time, we had a bottleneck of all this demand. So we had to, once we saw all those students that were waiting to get onto our courses, then we started to see a little bit of a difference in the bookings.
Hmm. No problems in the business then?
I wouldn't say there is any problems in the business. No, no, because you know like I said, it's an established business. Mm. We've got the teaching down. We've got everything down. You know, the system, how we teach, the methodology. That is all gravy. What I'm always concerned about as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, is not being left behind, being like always being one step ahead. Innovation.
Yeah.
Is in you know, and we live in a world where, you know, if you don't innovate and if you don't progress and you don't, and then you're just going to be left behind and your competitors are just going to leave you yep. with scraps, so to speak. So, you know, business may be good, but I'm always kind of stressing about what to do next.
I mean, and from my, you know, I say I'm always for this, and I'm sure it shows. I try very hard not to do too much research because I just want to hear your story. But in my head, a lot of it has been, my experience of LSB has been the, you know, from novice to master, which is your 12-week course. Yeah. There are other courses? You do other things there?
Yes, we do. We do. We have a variety of courses to suit one's needs. Someone in the industry, say a barber, a hairdresser, we have a 2-day skin fade course for, say, a hairdresser that doesn't know how to do a skin fade. We have a 3-week MVQ level 2 course, which you can gain your level 2 in 3 weeks, but for experienced people only,
yeah.
not for beginners, people that have been in industry for a year or two. And then we have our MVQ level 3 course, which is 3 weeks. We already have in the beginner course. That's weeks 10, 11, 12.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but we have people in the industry, barbers, that want to open up barbershops. And as far as I'm aware, you need a level 3 for insurance purposes, right. So they come and gain their level 3.
So you do find you've got quite an influx of industry floating around the building.
As well. On top of that, we have a lot of MUAs, makeup artists that want to come, that have a break from their sets or whatever jobs they were doing, and they want to come and do a crash course in a week's course or a 2 weeks course and how to cut men's hair. Yeah,
and we certainly saw. I found, I would say, probably about maybe 5-6 years ago, there seemed to be a lot of barbers turning up who'd been working as hairdressers. We got a couple that worked for us still, who were hairdressers who had then made the switch and become barbers. Is that still going on? Are you meeting a lot?
A lot of hairdressers.
A lot of hairdressers who are kind of fed up with doing the whole gambit and want to brush up on their barbering.
We do for the level 3. Yes, we do. But I would say those individuals, you're a lucky one because they have got a lot of tools under their belt. Yeah. They've got a lot of skills under their belt. You know, I think it's a lot easier to go from hairdressing to barbering than barbering to hairdressing.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much more involved.
Mm.
And once you understand how hair is cut and what happens when you cut it, how it falls, I think, you know, you've got that ground knowledge of how to do barbering as well.
Yeah.
Because I coming from a hairdressing background, for me, cutting with the scissors is way harder than using the yeah. clippers for me.
There's certainly more nuance in scissor work.
Yeah,
there?
For sure. I mean, you can teach pretty much most people how to use the clippers provided they have enough practice or repetition. But you know, for the scissor works, especially like things like scissor over comb and more advanced layering, I think you need years of experience yeah. when it comes to that.
Yeah. And again, I guess it comes back to that, our first point, that, you know, you need your flying hours. That, you know, if you've done 15, you know, if you've been doing 5-6 years of hairdressing, working in a ladies' salon, doing colour, doing everything, and then you decide you want to switch, you've still got that 5-6 years of flying hours under your belt to sure. adapt in.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, and that's kind of what it all comes down yeah. to. You know, your guys have come out with 12 weeks and an intense 12 weeks, but they still need more guidance. They still need more support.
Sure. But what I generally believe it is, the biggest sticking point is the timing.
Right.
I think it's not the skill itself. I think they know how to cut hair. Mm. And I always tell them, you know, when you go and cut next to a barber that has been self-taught or has been taught another way, you will see how good your training is.
Yeah.
When you're at LSB, because, you know, we are very methodical. You know, you're probably aware of like the Sassoon.
Well, I'm Sassoon's trained, so that tight method of how you cut hair.
That's what we wanted to, you know.
But it takes a while for the kind of fluidity to come in, which is when you can start doing a 30-minute haircut.
Absolutely. I mean, like sometimes you can look at a student and it'll be like watching paint dry with the way that they're using the clippers. And I will always say to him, look, you can cut hair really well, but you need to look like a barber.
Yeah,
you need to start looking like a barber. You need to look a bit more fluid in your work and a little bit more like you know what you're doing. The confidence will show through in your body language.
Yeah.
So for me, it's down to the body language that will give it away or not, whether you're prepared or not.
Yeah. And do you find, I mean, I found, like I say, your name tends to get a positive and a negative in varying degrees.
Yeah.
And I guess the more I've developed the conversation with them, the biggest bit is that kind of frustration that these guys aren't quite chair ready.
Yeah.
Do you encounter much of that yourself? Does it come back to you or is this all out of the way from you?
It used to be a lot back in the days where people were bothered about it.
Right.
Let's say 2017, 2018, that then when we were really established and, we were very busy and
firing,
very popular, we were firing. Used to hear a lot of noise back then. But nowadays, I don't hear so much noise, to be honest.
No, that's good.
And I think that's due to the fact that there's nowhere else you can learn. I mean, people are not taking apprentices on anymore.
I was going to say, that's the big change,
isn't
it?
So where are you going to learn? You're going to go to a college?
It's a really big change. Like I say, the majority of people that I meet tend to either come from paid-for courses or, you know, like I say, the new phenomenon of people who are self-taught, which is, as we've said with Liam, every now and again you get a shining star and there's exceptions to everything. But copying a YouTube haircut and being a fluid barber, I think, worlds apart.
We have a lot of those self-taught barbers come and learn with us. They do a short course with us. And like I said before, with the clippers, they're proficient.
Mm.
But as soon as you give them a pair of scissors, that's where they need work.
Yeah. And that's something that does take that discipline of someone showing you being taught.
Yeah, I mean, like the majority of the haircuts in the academy is clipper work fades. I wish we could give them more scissor work, because I wish we could get more haircut scissor work wise to get them understanding precision cutting, layering, how hair falls and to understand how to cut a long haircut, because that will come back around again.
Yeah.
If mallets came back, then long hair is going to come back.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had lots of conversations and it is amazing that kind of the way, Noel Gallagher's haircut's back, all the mullets are coming back, the curtains are coming back.
You said mullets were coming, they came back. Were they even in?
I think they appeared. I don't think they took the world by storm in the same way.
Anyone cool in a club surely wouldn't have a mullet in the 80s.
I think it became very popular with 14, 15-year-old kids. I think 14-year-old boys suddenly...
With all due respect, maybe this is a little bit before my time. Is this in the 80s we're talking about?
Oh, the mullet was an enormous part of the 80s.
Enormous, right?
Yeah. But, proper party at the front, business at the front, party at the back. Yeah. You know, I think the mullet of today is definitely has definitely become more classy.
It's infused now with a fade, or a taper, and it's probably layered a lot nicer. Oh,
it's a million miles away from the what was the radio DJ?
Pat Sharp.
Pat Sharp.
Yeah, there you go.
The ultimate. Yeah. That was it. But no, I mean, I do think that now that we're not seeing people being taken through full apprenticeships, we're not seeing, barbershops training through their own barbers, that yours and schools like yours have to be the future. You know, that's where, like I say, majority of my candidates come through. And it is for us to, you know, I think it is for us to come up with a proper graduate scheme.
Sure.
Now, if you're saying the timing and the scissor work is an issue, timing, that comes, surely.
That comes.
Yeah, it does come from work.
If you give them lots of haircuts and you put the pressure on them, they have no choice. They have no choice. Here you go, you've got 10 haircuts today. Get on with it. Yeah.
But the scissor work does need some more mentorship. Yeah. So what we're saying really is, as we're trying to do, and I've certainly not mastered it yet, we've not got there, but we're trying to adapt to having a graduate scheme with our barbers, that we have that hinterland between, you know, not quite on the shop floor, still doing more models and bringing them through over a shorter period, that we're gauging a kind of 3 month graduation period.
Sure.
That they've done a kind of 3 month period with you or one of your competitors.
Sure.
And then they come to us and do a 3 month continuation, if you like.
Absolutely.
Where they obviously there are salaries and they're nurtured, but much more about us mentoring them and trying to create barbers that are like ours, that are Laban London barbers.
I know you're the host, but can I ask you, how many shops you got now?
Two.
Two shops. How many chairs you got in those shops?
We've got five.
Five. So how frequently do you need to rehire? How does that come around?
It's not a big issue with us, to be fair. We do manage to hang on to our people. But I'm a big believer. I've also got a couple of hairdressing salons as well that have always had apprentices. And I think training's a big part for us. And I'm looking at a way of bringing that across to our barbershops, which I haven't mastered yet.
Sort of bridging the gap between those?
I'd like to have homegrown. We'd like to expand into more barbershops. And I'd like I'd like them to be staffed by people who've been through a training with us, so that I have real faith in them being more like our signature barbers to go on and open up more shops and do other things.
Okay. So is it just accepted that barbers will stay loyal for 1, 2, 3 years and then move on? Is that the accepted timeline now? You know, because it is a little bit of a revolving door where you have people come in that you employ, they build up their column and then they leave for whatever reason. And most of the time, the reason is probably not getting enough pay or personal reasons like wanting to move or stuff like that, or just getting bored of the
pace. Yeah, I mean, I think people do. I mean, our point of view... we've recently lost a member of staff who's gone to Oz.
Yeah.
Australia are doing a great scheme to encourage hairdressers and barbers to go out there. If you're under 30, you get a 2-year working visa.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue if you fancy doing a bit of travelling.
Yeah, I know.
So, that's a difficult one. And irritatingly, we haven't done the same scheme backwards in this country. So as an Aussie, you don't get 2 years to come and work in London, which is annoying. It'd be nice to have it both ways. My staff, we employ our team and we try and keep them as enthused and energised as we can. I think them being included and salaried and waged well is important. So we don't have a lot of movement, but we're looking to grow our company.
Yeah.
And so if we're looking to grow, we need more people.
Where I'm going with this is if you were a better employee, if you gave your employees the best kind of career that they could possibly get, then they're going to stay more loyal and you won't need to rehire as quickly.
As often, yeah.
As often.
Yeah, yeah.
What is your opinion on barber shop owners in general? Do you think that the employees are mistreated?
I think all industries have good and bad bosses.
Yeah.
I think I'm slightly skewed because most of the people I tend to encounter are really enthused and positive about the industry.
Yeah.
So I tend to speak to people who are more progressive and are looking for careers. I think there are a lot of stores out there, and it's hairdressing salons have always been at blame for this as much as barbers, who don't commit to their staff and see them as more of a commodity. Mm. And then you're always going to get the churn. I always think, you know, chair rental, I've got good mates of mine who've got a good chair rental business. Their guys are there years and years and years, and they get encouraged to go elsewhere, and they know they've got a good, solid business. They feel trusted, they feel respected, and they get on with their day. Equally, I know, you know, I hear the stories of people constantly moving up the road and someone else encouraging them around the corner. So I think there's good and bad in everything. I think it's certainly, I think in barbering, there seems to be more crossover, that the bad barbering companies and the good barbering companies can get confused about who's right. And so the staff will jump between the two.
Sure.
And feel they're going to get a great deal over there, jump, and then realise that's not the case. But, you know, I think that's probably the case in most firms. You know, I certainly think you've got to really put yourself out for your staff now, and too right. You know, yeah. I think I've always had a conscience that I want the team to feel it's their company.
And I suppose because there's so many more barbershops now, you've got more choice.
Yeah.
Where beforehand, you probably didn't have as many barbershops.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I really hope that our ethos is what keeps them, that they really feel, you know, our team feel valued and part of it.
Yeah.
I think all team, you should always question where you're working and if it could be better and if you're just worth more. I think you should always question that. I like being pushed around by my team.
Yeah.
You know, I like it when they push me.
Same.
I find I have more staff and encourage staff meetings where I come away with a bloody long list of what to do.
Sure.
Rather than me giving them a bloody long list. Yeah. And I kind of like that. I think that keeps us, that keeps me pushed. You know, my team are all half my age. And I like to think I've got twice the experience. But I think the kind of combination of the two should lead us to be a really good employee. Mm. But you don't always get it right.
Yeah, I wonder whether, you know, you've got to be a cool barbershop now, right? Because the image of barbering has changed over the years. It's now cool, right? It's a place where, you know, you get your barbers and they're all dressed up in individual looks, and you know, you've got all these stylish haircuts. You know, I think if you're gonna go into barbering, you want to go and work in a cool place that kind of maybe reflects your personality.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of I think there's room for everyone. I think, you know, our two stores are the same name. They have huge amounts in common, but have quite a different clientele. So I think with barbers, the big one is to know who your audience is going to be. Because if you're not, you know, the coolest kid on the block, it's going to seem fake if you suddenly start buying a label, you know, cutting your hair, tatting up and trying to be. You know, you're not going to be authentic, is a word I overuse. You're not going to be authentic. Yeah, there are those places, you know, and I think, you know, I'm speaking to more and more places that are kind of, you know, gender fluid barbershops and much more about people's identity and how they feel about their identity than whether they're hip and cool. I know an awful lot of guys that come into our shops who are well into their 70s, but they feel young at heart, who still want to come in and be part of the environment. So I think you need to kind of find out. I think if you know who you are as a barber, you should go and look for the shop that reflects you or the shop that you feel you want to aspire to.
Yeah.
And I think you should always try and be as lame as it sounds. It's your job to be the best you can be. And you want to find a company that you kind of go, that is going to make me better.
Sure.
So I think that's probably mine. Man, sure. I meant to be asking the questions. Yeah. What are you doing to me?
I've got off track a little bit.
Buddy, I've wanted to meet you for a very long time. I really appreciate your time with us.
I'm just intrigued. I'm intrigued to hear the other side of my job is to get people barbershop ready. So I'm going to hold my hands up and say I'm ignorant. I don't know enough about what's going on in the industry. Well, I've kind of stayed in my lane throughout the years and just really focused on doing the best job we can. Mm. And but with that, I haven't been in touch with the industry itself. So it's great to, you know, when I do finally meet some people in the industry, to ask them, what's going on? What's the feeling? What's the vibe in the industry right now? Are we worried? Are we anxious? You know, are we in a good place at the moment? You know, it'd be good to get a feel.
I think the barbershop industry, which is hopefully where we're going with our next three or four guests, is very much the crises that are going on. You know, we're talking about the lack of apprentices going in. We're talking about VAT and the costs of the VAT registered company, the employer.
We're trying to get that down, right?
That hopefully will change. Yeah. You know, we've already spoken about the vast amount of barbershops piggybacking other stores. On top of the businesses that are still shutting their doors, either because of the unnecessary competition or from the fallout of COVID.
Or they're just running a bad business.
There's always the bits that just ain't doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we don't try and solve them all here, but we try.
No,
lovely to hear your story, mate.
Thank you so much for coming down. It's been a pleasure.
I always ask that if anyone's viewing who wants to make contact with you, are they okay to email you?
Yeah, absolutely. They can contact me on info@londonschoolofbarbering.com, or if you want to message me personally, you can message me on michael@londonschoolofbarbering.com.
Perfect. We'll stick that on the content when you go up, and. Obviously, I'm always here to respond to any comment.
And I would love you to come and be a guest judge for us. Every 3 weeks, we have a fade competition for our graduates. And we always get a great guest judge in. Liam's going to be our next judge in a couple of weeks' time. So if you've got the time on a Friday, one day, we'd love to come in, and perhaps you can cherry pick your next...
Our first graduate.
Your first graduate. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Michael, thank you very much. Cheers,
You're
guys.
Welcome.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.